Many people, when you're doing evangelism, will bring up, what about all the evil things done by the church, such as the Crusades? And that is an excuse as to why they shouldn't be a Christian and why your gospel should be rejected because of the Crusades. Well, I think you'll be most interested at how you could do a judo throw on this. Because you know what judo is? Judo takes the momentum of the assailant and uses it against him, so he goes propelling into the wall and wonders what happened. I've been working a lot in Sudan. I've done about 26 mission trips into Sudan since 1995, and some of those trips were as long as 3 weeks and even a month. Wrote the book Faith and Defiance Sudan, which was so successful, went through two editions, and we're working on a third edition right now. But back in 1999, while our mission was being bombed by the National Islamic Front government in Sudan, while we were being bombed on Sunday morning church services, fellow missionaries were organizing reconciliation walks to the Middle East to apologize for the Crusades. There they were using church funds to get people to go under the missions budget to go to Turkey, of all places, and other parts in the Middle East to apologize for the Crusades, to grovel for the Crusades. Now, at that time, our churches were coming under aerial and artillery bombardment from jihadists. I'd had all kinds of experiences at the sharp end of these bombardments, and it seemed rather bizarre to me that they should be having reconciliation walks to apologize for the Crusades, which ended quite a while ago, and to the very people who are doing jihad, which is continuing at this very moment. Therefore, I undertook a study of the Crusades and of jihad. The popular misconceptions about the Crusades are that these were wars of aggressive expansionism fought by religious fanatics in order to evict Muslims from their homeland to force conversions to Christianity. That's the myth. However, the historical record does not support any of these assertions, which are commonly held. Anin Malouf, a Muslim, writes in The Crusade to Arab Eyes, he claims that the Crusaders' conquest of Jerusalem in 1099 was the starting point of a millennium of hostility between Islam and the West. In fact, no less an authority than Bill Clinton claimed that all the problems in the Middle East began with the Crusades. Hard to believe a man in his position could be so dumb. Islamic scholar John Esposito blamed the Crusades for disrupting 5 centuries of peaceful coexistence which had elapsed before the political events and an imperial papal power play led to centuries-long series of so-called holy wars that pitted Christendom against Islam and left an enduring legacy of misunderstanding and distrust. That is the politically correct myth. The question we need to ask is, what preceded the Crusades? The Crusades only started after 5 centuries of Islamic jihad had conquered and annihilated or forcibly converted over 2/3 of what had formerly been the Christian world. Shortly after the Islamic conquest of Jerusalem in 638, Christian pilgrims were harassed, massacred, and early in the 8th century, 60 Christian pilgrims from Amarim were crucified. The Muslim governor of Caesarea seized a group of pilgrims from Iconium, had them all executed. Muslims extorted ransom money from pilgrims and threatened to ransack the most holy churches in Christendom, such as the Church of the Resurrection, if they didn't pay exorbitant taxes. In the 8th century, a Muslim ruler banned all displays of the cross in Jerusalem. He also increased the penalty tax, the jizya, on Christians. He forbade Christians to engage in any religious instruction at all, even of their own children. In 772, the Caliph al-Mansur ordered the hands of all Christians and Jews in Jerusalem to be branded, like cattle are branded with red-hot pokers. In 789, Muslims beheaded a monk in Bethlehem. They plundered the monastery. They slaughtered many more Christians. In 923, a new wave of destruction of the churches was launched by the Muslim rulers. In 937, Muslims went on the rampage in Jerusalem on Palm Sunday, plundering and destroying the Church of Calvary and the Church of the Resurrection. Hardly confirming Bill Clinton's claim that the Crusades interrupted 5 centuries of peaceful coexistence and blah, blah, blah. In 1004, the Fatima Caliph Abu Ali al-Mansur al-Hakim unleashed a violent wave of church burning, destruction, confiscation of Christian property, ferocious slaughter of both Christians and Jews. Over the next 10 years, an unbelievable 30,000 churches were destroyed. Vast numbers of believers were forcibly converted, killed. Let me point out to you, this is decades before the Crusades even began. So how can anybody be so imbecilic and historically ignorant as to claim that the Crusades began the conflict between East and West and that it interrupted 5 centuries of peaceful coexistence? In 1009, Al-Hakim ordered that the most holy churches in Christendom, the Church of the Holy Sepulchre and the Church of the Resurrection Jerusalem, be destroyed. And they were the most important churches in Christendom at that time. He heaped humiliating and burdensome decrees on both Christians and Jews, forcing Christians to wear heavy crosses around their necks and Jews to have blocks of wood in the shape of a calf around their necks. Ultimately, he ordered Christians and Jews to either accept Islam or flee his areas of control, or they were killed. Christians remained in a precarious position and under threat throughout the Middle East. Then they went from the frying pan into the fire. When the Seljuk Turks swept into Jerusalem in 1077, they murdered over 3,000 people, including many Christians. It was at this point that the Christian emperor of Byzantium, Alexis I, appealed for help to the Western churches. Pope Urban II challenged the Knights of Europe at the Council of Clermont in 1095. And these are his words. "The Turks and Arabs have attacked our brethren in the east and have conquered the territory of Romania," that meant the Eastern Empire, "as far as the shore of the Mediterranean and the Hellespont. They have occupied more and more of the lands of those Christians and have overcome them in 7 battles. They have killed and captured many and have destroyed the churches and devastated the empire. If you continue to permit them to continue thus for a while with impunity, the faithful of God will be much more widely attacked by them. On this account, I persuade all men of whatever rank, foot soldiers and knights, poor and rich, to carry aid promptly to those Christians." Now, you can examine the record. Nowhere was Pope Urban II calling for the launch of crusades for conquest or conversions. They were merely to remove Islamic invaders from lands that had previously been Christian, to restore religious freedom to the Holy Lands. So we need to consider the myths and the misconceptions. And one of my authorities that I'm going to be using is Jonathan Riley Smith, professor of Oxford University. He is considered one of the finest authorities on the Crusades in the world today, the author of numerous books, which I have in my possession. The Crusades were reacting to over 4 centuries of Islamic jihad. That's the first thing to point out. It had wiped out over 50% of all the Christians in the world and conquered over 60% of the Christian lands on earth before the Crusades even began. Can I remind you that the church did not begin in Europe? It began in the Middle East and North Africa. Let me remind you that the greatest church leaders in the early church were Africans: Tertullian, Ignatius, Cyprian, and Origen, Irenaeus, all North Africans. And it's in those very countries that today Islam rules supreme. They annihilated the church, destroyed thousands of churches in those areas before the Crusades began. Many of the towns liberated by the Crusaders were still over 90% Christian when the Crusaders arrived. The Middle East was the birthplace of the Christian church. It was the Christians who had been conquered and oppressed by the Seljuk Turks. So many of the towns in the Middle East welcomed the Crusaders as liberators. Now, I'm just mentioning this because how many here were at Cape Town's first day of prayer, the Transformations prayer meeting in Newlands Rugby Stadium? Anyone here actually there? Okay, well, there was a few of us. I remember one of the prayers they prayed for. There was not a prayer about the sin of abortion or any of those other evils, remember. But one of the prayers that some imbecile prayed was to repent for the sins of Christians invading Muslim lands. Which Christians have invaded Muslim lands? When? What are they talking about? I can talk of many Christian lands invaded by Muslims today, like southern Sudan. But this is the kind of imbecility that prevails at Christian events, because they're ignorant of the history. Far from the Crusaders being the aggressors, it was the Muslim armies which had spread Islam from Saudi Arabia across the whole of Christian North Africa into Spain and even France, within the first century after the death of Muhammad. And here we've got the picture of the Knights of Europe gathered under Charles Martel the Hammer in 732 AD at the Battle of Tours, just south of France, stopping the six waves of Islamic cavalry. That was the high watermark of the Islamic advance into Europe. They were almost ready to take Paris, and the Christians broke their advance and sent them reeling back across the Pyrenees Mountains into Spain. And there you can see how Islam spread by the sword across the whole of North Africa, across Spain, even as far as France, within the first century after Muhammad. Muslim armies sacked and slaughtered their way across some of the greatest Christian cities in the world, including Alexandria and Carthage and Antioch and Constantinople. And these Muslim invaders destroyed over 3,200 Christian churches just in the first 100 years of Islam. As Professor Thomas Madden, another recognized authority on the Crusades in the world today, in The Real History of the Crusades, Thomas Madden points out, the Crusades to the East were in every way defensive wars. Have you ever heard Crusades described as defensive wars? I'd always heard them described as aggressive wars. They were, says Professor Madden, a direct response to Muslim aggression, an attempt to turn back or defend against Muslim conquest of Christian lands. Christians in the 11th century were not paranoid fanatics. They certainly weren't paranoid fanatics. The Muslims were raiding them. They were carrying away their people as slaves. Do you know where the word slave comes from? The name comes from Slavs. The Slavs, the people of Eastern Europe, were the main slaves at one time. So the very word slave comes from the Eastern Europe peoples, the Slavs. Muslims really were gunning for them, says Professor Madden. Islam was born in war, and it grew the same way. From the time of Muhammad, the means of Muslim expansion has always been by the sword. Christianity was the dominant religion of power and wealth, the most productive power. The Christian world, therefore, was a prime target for the earliest caliphs, and it would remain so for Muslim leaders for the next 1,000 years. They lived off plunder, and therefore, we plunder the people who are the most productive. The Crusades were but a response to more than 4 centuries of conquest in which Muslims had already captured over 2/3 of the Christian world, still quoting from Professor Madden. As the London Telegraph pointed out in an interesting editorial recently, a more realistic view of history requires less retrospective fantasy and more brain work. It means forcing your heads around to see what motivated men and women centuries ago. By the way, this is a picture of Florentine, who was one of the female crusaders who dispatched numerous Muslims effectively in sword combat on horseback. Quite unusual for women to have been involved in that kind of activity at that time, but an actual historical figure. Still quoting from the English Daily Telegraph, try to think the unthinkable, that the crusaders were right and that we should be grateful to them. Wow, now that's really the unthinkable, is it not? Professor Jonathan Riley Smith explains that crusading was an act of love for one's neighbor, an act of mercy to right a terrible wrong. As one church leader wrote to the Knights Templar, you carry out in deeds the words of the gospel. Greater love has no man than this, than that he laid down his life for his friends. Professor Riley Smith points out that the goals of the crusaders were firstly to rescue the Christians of the East. Many thousands of Christians are bound in slavery and imprisoned by Muslims and tortured with innumerable torments. Secondly, the liberation of Jerusalem and other places made holy by the life of Christ were their goals. The medieval crusaders saw themselves as pilgrims, restoring to the Lord Jesus Christ his property. The crusaders' conquest of Jerusalem, therefore, was not colonialism, but an act of restoration and an open declaration of one's love for God. Here's Godfrey of England breaking through the wall of Jerusalem in that great victory when they liberated Jerusalem from the Muslim invaders in 1099. It is often assumed that the central goal of the Crusades was forced conversion of the Muslim world. Nothing could be further from the truth. Yes, there were people like St. Francis of Assisi who traveled to Egypt, went behind enemy lines, and went to preach the gospel to the Sultan of Egypt. I mean, he actually did that, as this picture commemorates. But that was not the goal of most crusaders. The crusaders were going on a military mission to defeat the Muslim military threat and to liberate Christian lands. The goal was not the conversion of Muslims by the sword. That was never the goal of the crusaders. There's no instance recorded that the professors Madden and Jonathan Riley Smith are aware of any Muslim being forced at the point of a sword to convert. Just didn't happen. That's a myth. From the perspective of the medieval Christians, Muslims were the enemies of Christ. I'm still quoting from Professor Madden. Muslims were the enemies of Christ and his church. It was the crusaders' task to defeat and defend against them. That was all. Muslims who lived in crusader-won territories were generally allowed to retain their property and livelihood, and they were always allowed to retain their religion. When we think about the Middle Ages, we inevitably view Europe in the light of what it became, rather than what it was. The fact is, in the Middle Ages, the superpower of the Middle Ages was Islam, not actually Christendom, or what we today call Europe. The Crusades were a battle against all odds, with impossibly long lines of supply and cripplingly inadequate logistics. It was a David against Goliath enterprise from the very beginning. The chances of success for the First Crusade were highly improbable. They had no leader, no chain of command, no supply lines, no detailed strategy. The First Crusade consisted simply of thousands of dedicated warriors marching deep into enemy territory, thousands of kilometers from home. Many of them died of starvation, disease, and wounds. It was a rough campaign that was always on the brink of disaster. Yet it was miraculously successful, these professors state. How was it successful? By 1098, the Crusaders had liberated Nicaea and Antioch to Christian rule. And in July 1099, they reconquered Jerusalem and began to rebuild a Christian state in Palestine. When Jerusalem fell to Saladin almost 100 years later, in 1187, Christians across Europe perceived that God was punishing them for their sins. And reform movements sprang up, dedicated to purifying Christian society so that it could become worthy of victory in the East, such as the Waldensians. Professor Madden of St. Louis University, and the author of A Concise History of the Crusades, has observed, "From the safe distance of many centuries, it's easy enough for us to scowl in disgust at the Crusaders. Religion, after all, is nothing to fight wars over. But we should be mindful that our medieval ancestors would have been equally disgusted by our infinitely more destructive wars fought in the names of political ideologies. Just think of what the 20th century has done, of the Holocaust of the 20th century, the mass murders that we looked at just the other day as we were going through the worst disaster in Saturday, and what communism has done, and the 169 million people killed by secular humanist states in the 20th century. So if we are wanting to tut-tut-tut and wave a finger at the Crusaders, what do you think they would say about our century? Whether we admire the Crusaders or not, it is a fact that the world we know today would not exist without their efforts. The ancient faith of Christianity, with its respect for women, the only religion that had real respect for women, with its hostility to slavery, not only did Christianity survive, but it flourished. Without the Crusades, Christianity might have followed Zoroastrianism, another of Islam's rivals, into extinction. But for the Crusades, Europe would have probably fallen to Islam and become Eurabia. And the United States and South Africa would never have come into existence. The Protestant faith would not have been known, because without a Europe into which the Reformation could be born, our nations and the churches that we belong to would not even exist. We probably wouldn't be alive, because our ancestors would probably have been killed. Medical science wouldn't have developed as it came out of Christianity. Many of us who were saved by medical intervention would not be here if there'd been no Reformation out of which the scientific and medical revolutions came. And if we were alive, we'd be Muslims or slaves of Muslims. I don't know which is worse. But for the Crusades, Europe would have probably fallen to Islam. Dr. Ted Baer of Movie Guide warns viewers to be media wise enough to reject revisionist history, such as the Kingdom of Heaven. He says the problem is that future generations could accept this politically correct anti-Christian propaganda. Now, I want to deal with this at some length, because how many of you would have seen the Kingdom of Heaven film? You haven't missed a thing. But it's an excellent example of all the politically correct myths and legends and anti-Christian propaganda crammed into one film. I mean, it is extraordinary how they managed to get everything wrong, but everything is on target as far as the way the... This is the Crusades according to Osama bin Laden, as Professor Jonathan Riley Smith called it. So let me give a bit of analysis, because again, if somebody wants to bring up this film, you can do a judo throw and propel them against the wall and reality. I call it Hollywood's Crusade Against History. Ridley Scott's blockbuster epic of Kingdom of Heaven presents one of the worst distortions of history ever seen on a screen in recent years. Focusing on the fall of Jerusalem in 1187, of course, to Saladin's Muslim armies, he couldn't focus on the Christian victory of 1099. He must focus on the Crusader defeat of 1187. So this anti-Christian, politically correct revisionism gets everything wrong, and I mean everything. First of all, Scott's Kingdom of Heaven has its geography very wrong. We know that the film was shot in Spain and Morocco, and it shows. Most people should know that Jerusalem is not in the middle of the Sahara Desert. Yet in this film, Jerusalem's high walls are surrounded by sand dunes. Without a tree, without a bush, without a blade of grass. There is no Mount of Olives. There's no Kidron Valley. There's no Valley of Hidden. Nowhere to be seen. Just tarmac flat sand all around the computer-generated walls. Unlike the Crusaders who liberated Jerusalem in 1099, Saladin's army have no problem moving their massive ahistoric siege engines and assault towers right up to the walls of Jerusalem, because Scott's Jerusalem, King of Heaven, isn't surrounded by any valleys and ditches. How convenient. The film also boldly asserts that Messina was the seaport to the Holy Land. Now, Messina is on the island of Sicily. So one wonders why French Crusaders would or how they could depart from there. In fact, Genoa, Venice, and Naples on the mainland were the ports from which the Crusaders set sail from. Kingdom of Heaven distorts history beyond all recognition. The 100-year truce between Christian and Muslim armies is a figment of their imagination. It never happened. The warfare throughout the 12th century was incessant. What 100-year truce? What a lot of rot. The depiction of the Knights Templar as a band of religious fanatics trying to shatter the truce and provoke war with the poor Muslims by attacking the caravans is a total fabrication. No Knights Templar ever attacked any caravans. Attacking caravans is what Muhammad, the founder of Islam, engaged in regularly, as did his hand-picked apostles, the Caliphs. The Knights Templar were formed primarily to protect travelers from the attacks of the Muslim armies. In fact, it was the slaughter of Christian pilgrims by Muslim armies in violation of early agreements of safe passage that precipitated the Crusades in the first place. The central figure of this film, Sir Balian, is a historical figure who did in fact play a critical role in the defense of Jerusalem in 1187. But the film script distorts his character and role beyond all recognition. First of all, Balian was not a blacksmith, nor did his wife commit suicide, nor was he illegitimate, nor was he raised as a commoner. His father, Balian the Old, not Godfrey as they put in the movie, they must have thought a Balian Senior and a Balian Junior wouldn't work, confused the imbeciles who watch their film, so they changed his name to Godfrey. He had three sons, all legitimate, Hugh, Baldwin, and Balian. Balian never had to travel to the Holy Land, as they depict it here, because he grew up as part of the nobility there. Balian was married to royalty long before the events portrayed in the film, and he wasn't at all romantically involved with the Princess Sabella. That kind of wrecks the plot right there. In Kingdom of Heaven, Balian is portrayed as questioning whether God exists. Although according to historical records, it's very clear that Sir Balian was a dedicated Christian who took his faith very seriously. Nor did Balian desert the defense of Jerusalem and the Holy Land following the fall of Jerusalem. Far from returning to France, Balian proceeded to Beirut in Lebanon, which he helped fortify against Islamic invasion. He was present with Richard the Lionhearted at the signing of the peace with Saladin, which secured safe passage for the Christian pilgrims and recognized Crusader control over their 90-mile stretch of coastline from Tyre to Jaffa. So this film that ends with Richard Lionheart pleading with Balian to come and help him on his crusade, and Balian just wanted to go back to being a blacksmith, total fiction, fabrication, Hollywood garbage, didn't happen. According to Kingdom of Heaven, the real hero in the story is the famous Muslim general Saladin. Now, although Saladin was an exceptionally gifted military strategist and unusually chivalrous, the film has uncritically accepted and embellished the legends about Saladin beyond what the historical record could support. He was a Muslim Kurd from what today is northern Iraq. He was raised in a privileged family, He was very ambitious. At age 14, he joined his uncle's military staff. At age 31, he followed his uncle to Egypt, where his uncle was Grand Vizier. Where his uncle died under mysterious circumstances 2 months later, Selden seized power, defeated competing Muslim leaders, started the dynasty which established Egypt as the major Muslim superpower in the Middle East. A ruthless man. Far from having war forced upon him, as the film depicts, they just love the reluctant warrior rubbish, Saladin initiated the conflict by declaring a jihad against the Christians. He swept throughout Palestine. He captured more than 50 crusader castles in 2 years. That's not the reluctant warrior. You don't capture 50 castles by trying to avoid war. I mean, that's clear pattern, clear intention. He had a strategy. At the Battle of Hattin on the 4th of July, 1187, Saladin's army defeated the Christians on the shores of Lake Tiberias, the Sea of Galilee. Notice the shores of Lake Tiberias. Although in the film, this battle is depicted as being in a waterless desert. Far from being the magnanimous victor depicted in the modern legends and in this pathetic film, Saladin was a ruthless general who had thousands of Christian prisoners beheaded in cold blood, including all of the prisoners captured after the Battle of Hattin. Although they depict this in the film that he's generous and gracious and merciful, rubbish. He killed all the prisoners in cold blood. In this film, Saladin's portrayed as being most gracious in allowing the defenders of Jerusalem safe passage. In fact, after the negotiated surrender of Jerusalem when the supply lines were untenable, which the patriarch, the pastor of Jerusalem, initiated, not Saladin, Saladin demanded every man, woman, and child in Jerusalem pay a ransom for his or her freedom, or face the grim prospect of Islamic slavery. In order to save the lives and liberty of the poor people who couldn't afford the heavy ransom demanded by Saladin, Balian paid out of his own resources the ransom required for those who could not afford it. The theology in the kingdom of heaven is also all wrong. The film depicts some monk standing by the roadside repeating, "To kill an infidel is not murder, it's a pathway to heaven." Now, as any student of the Bible will be able to tell you, that concept does not appear anywhere in the Bible. Neither do those words appear anywhere in the Bible. But as any student of the Quran should be able to tell you, that is exactly what the Islamic doctrine of jihad is all about. At one point early in the film, as Muslims bow in prayer towards Mecca, Balian comments, "You allow them to pray?" And Knight sneers, "As long as they pay their taxes." In fact, the Crusaders never required any extra taxes of Muslims in order to allow them to pray. That is the Islamic doctrine and practice of jizah. To this day, Muslim governments require jizah, tribute taxes, of dhimmis, that's us, Jews and Christians, that are under Islamic rule. I mean, would you think it would be reasonable if the Americans said to the Muslims in their population, "Look, we've got so much more extra security and expenses for airlines because of what your Muslim terrorists have done, encouraged by your mosques. So all Muslims in America are going to have to pay 50% more taxes than everyone else to cover the expense of the wars and extra security." It's not going to happen. But Christians pay 8 times more taxes in Muslim lands, routinely. That is jizah. Before the Crusaders march out to the disastrous Battle of Hattin, the film has one knight declaring, "The army of Jesus Christ can never be defeated." However, there's no such doctrine in the Bible or in Christian theology. It is, in fact, Islamic doctrine that no Muslim army can ever be defeated by an infidel army. This Muhammad asserted on the authority of Allah himself, something which the recent defeats of the Taliban in Afghanistan and Saddam Hussein's army in Iraq, which remember was the Muslim superpower of the Middle East, the defeat of the Taliban and Saddam Hussein's military in the Middle East has precipitated a serious theological problem for Islamic scholars. How did the American infidels manage to defeat Muslim military, which Muhammad assured them on the authority of Allah could never happen? This has created a serious theological problem for them. Now, quite aside from the factual errors in the geography, the attributing of Islamic doctrine to Christians, the blatant distortion of history, the kingdom of heaven is an insult to the intelligence of any viewers in terms of its preposterous script. Here we are expected to believe that Balian is grieving his wife's death, but he doesn't attend to her funeral or burial. That Balian raised a commoner trained only as a blacksmith from France could within days of arriving in Palestine be teaching the local people how to practice agriculture, how to dig wells in a desert. That this blacksmith with no military training could know more about siege engines, weapons, military strategy than all the knights and military professionals concentrated in the Holy Land put together. Just where would a blacksmith have learnt all about siege engines, trabuckets, cavalry tactics and defensive strategy? The filmmakers of Kingdom of Heaven try to make up for a lack of script and lack of character by overdosing on computer-generated explosions and fictional firepower capabilities. Actually, the maximum range for a 12th century catapult would have been 150 yards, 150 meters, with about 300-pound rock, that's about 140 kilograms. In this film, these trabuckets hurl tons of rocks in a single fling across a kilometer or so, it looks, and just splinter the stone walls of Jerusalem to powder. It's so obviously computer-generated garbage and ahistoric, completely against all rules of physics, that these guys didn't have titanium cables, they had rope, for goodness sakes. You know, honestly and truly, how anybody can sit there and take this sort of garbage seriously is bewildering. And how can any viewer with any grasp of history or any knowledge of military tactics swallow the kind of tactics and strategy dished up in films like Kingdom of Heaven? What soldier throws his shield away just before engaging a mass assault by the enemy? Do you know how heavy these shields are? And here they would have carried them 3,000 kilometers just to throw it away before you need it. Now, Orlando Bloom apparently wanted his long flowing locks to flow in the breeze, but seriously, what knight throws his helmet away just before engaging in hand-to-hand combat? Guys running at you with axes and so on. You know, are you kidding? That's the very moment you would want your shield and your helmet. That's why you carried it all those distances. Also, as any student of history and anthropology should be able to tell you, crusaders did not burn the bodies of their dead. That was the practice of the Vikings, the ancient Greeks, the Hindus. Not the Christians who buried the dead. In this film, Christians burn the dead, Muslims bury their dead. And the ridiculous speech with its feel-good, why can't we all just get along together? That kind of drivel, dished up by Orlando Bloom's Balian on the walls of Jerusalem, while Selden's armies politely delay their attack until he's finished his nauseating speech. This may sound believable to some 21st century humanist, but they were not the convictions of any 12th century crusader. As for the pathetic egalitarian gesture of knighting everybody, I knight you all, without any training, no testing, no code of conduct, it's so ahistoric that it's out of touch with reality, so as to make one wonder what drugs the scriptwriters were on at the time. The ridiculous and inane comments attributed to the bishop in the film are also not only highly unlikely, but jarringly anachronistic, sort of thing that some peacenik's going to say in the 21st century, not the sort of thing that would have been said then. Producer Ridley Scott and scriptwriter William Monahan obviously hate Christianity. But just in case any viewers lack the discernment to detect the anti-Christian hostility, the prejudice, which permeates the entire movie, Ridley Scott has gone on record stating, Balian is an agnostic, just like me. Of course, there was no such thing as agnosticism in the 12th century, especially not amongst crusaders. The word agnostic was a 19th century invention. This is the kind of garbage that Hollywood dished up. Now, I'm spending a lot of time on one film, but you can see if you break down a film with a knowledge of history, you will see that most of the garbage Hollywood dishes up is just ahistoric junk. Considering a few people today read history books, and I most depend entirely on these films which are based on a true story. The names of the place are true, only the facts have been changed to protect the guilty. Now, that sort of films. Most people only know about the history of the past from these kind of films. The blind prejudice and obsessive hatred against Christianity on the part of producers and directors should be frightening. As Karl Marx declared, the first battlefield is a rewriting of history. Now, I'm sure all the enemies of Christianity were absolutely delighted with propaganda pics like Kingdom of Heaven. Osama bin Laden would have been thrilled in particular. The classic Hollywood version of the Crusades, as depicted in this $150 million Kingdom of Heaven epic, which I'm delighted to tell you did not recover its costs, was produced in consultation with groups such as the Council on American Islamic Relations, but you can be sure they didn't have one Christian advisor on the Christian side, but they sure didn't want to upset the Muslims, and they didn't. Professor Jonathan Riley Smith, author of A Short History of the Crusades, an uncharacteristically non-British way of describing it, described the film as rubbish. It's not historically accurate at all. It depicts Muslims as sophisticated and civilized, and the Crusades are all brutes and barbarians. It has nothing to do with reality. I could add that all the Muslims seem to use a really nice laundromat. They've got the cleanest, whitest robes, which are neatly ironed and pressed, and they all look like they've had a nice shower that morning, whereas the Crusaders look like they haven't washed their clothes since they left Europe, and they, you know, really gungy, dirty brutes. And you wondered why the Crusaders didn't use the same laundromats that the Muslims were using. The fact is, the Crusades of the Middle East were a reaction to centuries of jihad. That's what we need to remember. In the first century of Islam alone, Muslim invaders conquered the whole of previously Christian North Africa, destroying 3,200 Christian churches in just 100 years. In the first three centuries of Islam, Muslim forces killed Christians, kidnapped their children to raise them as Muslims, compelled people at the point of the sword to convert to Islam. Up to 50% of all the Christians in the world had been wiped out during those first three centuries of Islam. The Saracens, as the Muslim invaders were called, desecrated Christian places of worship and were severely persecuting Christians. Pilgrims were being prevented from visiting those places where our Lord was born, where he was crucified, where he was raised from the dead. It was only after four centuries of Islamic jihad that the Crusades were launched as a belated reaction to the blatant Islamic jihad. As the Christian History Institute has pointed out, the characterizing of these Crusaders as only in it for the plunder, for the loot, and the idea that they were just there for financial enrichment betrays an ignorance of both geography and history. The vast majority of the Crusaders were impoverished and financially ruined by the Crusades. Crusaders, through great sacrifice, through great personal expense, left their homes and families to travel 3,000 kilometers across treacherous and inhospitable terrain. And the shortest crusade lasted 4 years. Considering that 10% of the Crusaders had horses and 90% were foot soldiers, the sheer fact of logistics is the Crusaders could not have possibly carried back enough loot to have made up for the loss of earnings and high expenses involved in these crusades. Now, when we do hikes in the GCC and you've got a backpack that's full, you're hiking over the mountain and you're just doing it for one night, you may find that backpack gets heavier the longer you go. Imagine if you've got to take everything you need and your weapons, your shields, your armor, your helmets, your sword, of course, it's pretty heavy, your food, the water when you're crossing deserts. It's going to be a heavy trip. How much loot do you think they could carry back? Not enough to cover the expenses, you can be sure of that. People have forgotten what pedestrian travel, even if you've got a horse, there's a limit to what the horse can carry. Many crusaders lost their homes, their farms, to finance their involvement in the crusades. They were not in it for the loot. There's more to life than money. That may be a newsflash to some Hollywood guys, but perhaps some self-seeking materialistic agnostics in the 21st century cannot understand that some people could be motivated by something other than personal financial enrichment. It galls me how many times I'm asked, especially in America, when I'm talking about Sudan. Oh, isn't the fighting in Sudan just about oil? No, it's not about oil. In fact, they only discovered oil there very recently. The war's been going on a whole lot longer. Oil might aggravate it and finance some of their weapons, but you can be sure the Islamic jihadists would be, they've been doing this long before there was oil discovered, and they'd be doing it whether it's oil or not. They don't seem to understand that not all wars are started by oil. But there's this obsessive compulsive mentality that most people are only motivated by money. And I don't think that's true. A lot of people are, but not everyone. The fact is that many people make sacrifices for their religious convictions and in order to help others. In the case of the Crusaders, the historical record makes clear that amongst the motivations that led to tens of thousands of volunteers to reclaim the Holy Land was a sense of Christian duty to help their fellow Christians in the East, whose lands had been invaded and whose churches had been desecrated by Muslim armies, in a desire to secure access to the Holy Lands for pilgrims. There was also the desire to fight for the honor of the Lord Jesus Christ, whose churches had been destroyed, whose deity had been denied by the Muslim aggressors, who were calling their Lord a liar. He said, I and the Father are one, they're denying us. And you know the way the Crusaders were? They would fight for honor of their Lord. They're sure going to fight for the honor of the Lord of Lords. In other words, to the Crusaders, this was a defensive war to reclaim Christian lands from Muslim invaders. For centuries, Christians have looked at the Crusaders as the example of dedication, and so much so that many evangelistic campaigns have been called evangelistic crusades. One of the greatest missions of recent years was started in the last century, was started by C.T. Studd, the great British cricketer turned pioneer missionary. And what did he call his mission? Worldwide Evangelization Crusade, WEC. Sorry to say, his successors have taken Crusade out and have changed the name to Worldwide Evangelization for Christ. They're embarrassed about the name Crusade. There's many, many who are Campus Crusade for Christ also getting awfully embarrassed about that and trying to change the life ministries and things like that. There's many Christians who are trying to take it out of the lexicon. But this is the first generation of Christians who is embarrassed about the Crusades. For all the rest of history, Christians have looked at the Crusaders. These were people of courage and nobility who we need to honor. And if you think, because you read Chick publications, that all the Crusaders were Roman Catholics and none of them were true Christians, then I've got another story for you. Have you ever read On Loving God by Bernard of Clairvaux? One of the finest Christian devotional works. Bernard of Clairvaux knew the Lord Jesus and he had a real relationship with him, as On Loving God shows. You can't portray everybody before the Reformation as Roman Catholic. Yes, there was only one Roman Catholic institution, but there was lots of dissent. There were the Waldensians, there were the Albigensians, there were the Lollards. There was the reformers like Wycliffe, and there was Savonarola and Huss. There was lots of undercurrents going. You can't call Francis of Assisi or many of the others who were out there preaching the gospel that they were just some classic Roman Catholic papist. It's just not right. The mentality that somehow or other there were no real Christians from the time of the apostles till the Reformation is ahistoric nonsense. There were many dedicated Christians. Yes, the churches were corrupt. Yes, the popes were abominable. Yes, there was a lot of superstitious rubbish in the Middle Ages. But there were also some very genuine, dedicated Christians. And the Crusades were a time of spiritual revival and tremendous dedication amongst them. You cannot write off the Crusaders as non-Christians. Some of them may be, but I think most Crusaders knew more about genuine Christianity than most of our church members today. We may not share their convictions. We may not agree with their methods. But we ought to evaluate the Crusaders in the light of the realities of the 11th and 12th centuries and not anachronistically project our standards and our politics back upon them. Scriptwriter William Monahan and director Ridley Scott obviously don't understand the motivations behind the Crusaders. And they apparently do not understand the Islamic doctrine of jihad either, which the film makes no reference to. Now this is inexplicable. Considering that jihad was the central threat that had led to the reaction of the Crusaders, this omission is inexplicable. It's actually absolutely inexcusable. Kingdom of Heaven preoccupies itself with fictionalizing Crusader atrocities like attacking Muslim caravans and attacking a fictional sister of Saladin, but ignores the pattern of the preceding five centuries of genocide and aggression by Islamic armies. For those who want the politically incorrect rest of the story, which Kingdom of Heaven does not even hint at, you'd want to read Slavery, Terrorism, and Islam, The Historical Roots and Contemporary Threat. Scott's Kingdom of Heaven is politically correct, pro-Muslim, anti-Christian propaganda. It makes poor entertainment, and it's a worthless distortion of reality. But other than that, it's okay. In his article, Self-Hate, Revisionist History, and Christophobia in the Movie Kingdom of Heaven, Dr. Ted Baer notes some of the differences between Muhammad and Christ, and I think we'd find this very instructive and useful in evangelism. Boy, this is an uneven battle. You want to put Muhammad and Christ next to one another in the scales, it's a no-brainer. But just for the sake of the exercise, Muhammad was the prophet of war. Christ is the prince of peace. Muhammad's disciples killed for their faith. Christ's disciples were killed for their faith. Muhammad promoted persecution against the infidels. Christ forgave and converted the chief persecutor, Paul. Muhammad was the taker of life. Christ is the giver of life. Muhammad and his fellow warriors murdered thousands. Christ murdered none, but he saved many. Muhammad's method was compulsion, but Christ's aim was conversion. Muhammad practiced force. Christ preached faith. Muhammad was a warrior. Christ is a deliverer. Muhammad said to the masses, convert or die. Christ said, believe and live. Muhammad was swift to shed blood. Christ shed his own blood for the salvation of many. Muhammad preached death to the infidel. Christ prayed, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. Muhammad declared a holy war, jihad, against the infidels. Christ achieved a holy victory on Calvary's cross, and his followers share in that victory. Muhammad constrained people by conquest. Christ constrained people by love. Modern terrorists derive their inspiration from Muhammad and carry out their despicable atrocities in the name of his God, Allah. Christians derive their inspiration from the one who said, blessed are the peacemakers. Modern day disciples of Muhammad respond to terrorist attacks by cheering in the streets. Modern day Christians are deeply grieved at past atrocities carried out by those who were Christians in name only. Again, quoting from his article. Many Muslims are peaceful and peace-loving because they do not strictly follow the teachings of their founder. Some Christians are not peaceful and peace-loving because they do not strictly follow the teachings of their founder. You see, a Muslim who is a violent, aggressive jihadist is actually following the teachings of Muhammad. A Christian who is violent and aggressive is violating the example and the command of Christ. That's a key difference. Muhammad called upon his servants to fight. Jesus said, my kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, then would my servants fight. But now is my kingdom not from here. Muhammad ordered death to the Jews. Christ ordered that the gospel be preached to the Jew first. The Quran says, fight and slay the pagans wherever you find them. Christ said, preach the gospel to every creature. Muhammad's mission was to conquer the world for Allah. Christ's mission was to conquer sin's penalty and power by substitutionary atonement. Muhammad claimed there was but one God, Allah. Christ claimed that he was God, Emmanuel. Muhammad's tomb today is occupied. No question about it. There's a picture of it. You're not meant to take pictures of it, but that's a picture of Muhammad's tomb in Medina. On the right, Christ's tomb, empty. The word crusade does not appear in the Bible. You won't find it in any of your concordances, nor is it commanded in Christianity. However, jihad is the sixth pillar of Islam and the second greatest command of Muhammad. It's not only commended, it's commanded in the Quran. Can I direct your attention to this picture? This is an oil painting, a famous Islamic oil painting done by Arabs, and it depicts Mehmed II of the Turks conquering Constantinople. This is their picture. It's a massive, bigger than this wall, even if you turn the wall sideways, oil painting. And under the horse of Mehmed II is a Christian princess. Her long, flowing, blonde hair, her crown, and her dress plainly seen. They depicted, this isn't a photograph, this is a drawing, an oil painting, and to depict his victory, they showed their contempt for women and for civilians, unarmed civilians, by putting a Christian princess under the horse's hooves. Obviously, a lot of civilians massacred here, and they're glorying in massacring civilians. Can you imagine some oil painting in the rotunda of America where you would have some picture of, say, some American cavalryman with his foot over some Indian woman, disarmed, lying? I mean, just incomprehensible. Which kind of civilization exalts in their art killing of unarmed civilian women? Jihad, the subjugation and forcible conversion of all people to Islam, and world domination are in fact central tenets of Islam. Jihad is the sixth pillar of Islam. Jihad was so important to Muhammad that he declared it to be the second most important deed in Islam. Allah's apostle was asked, what is the best deed? He replied, to believe in Allah and his apostle. The questioner then asked, what is the next in goodness? Muhammad replied, to participate in jihad in Allah's cause. So, millions of Christians have been slaughtered throughout the centuries by Islamic militants, such as the 1.5 million Armenians murdered in Turkey in 1915. Christians have continued to be slaughtered by Islamic militants in Indonesia, in the Philippines, Sudan, and Nigeria to this present day. Churches burned in northern Nigeria. To this day, Muslims continue the holy war against Christians, for example, in Sudan. The Crusades ended many centuries ago. However, the Islamic Jihad is carried out to this day. And here we've got pictures of the destruction of Smyrna in 1922, the wiping out of the last Christian city in Asia, 1922. This is a Sudanese Christian in Nub Mountains, James Cromer, 52 years old when I took the picture, arm cut off at the elbows by the Arabs. Islamic, a Christian evangelist in Nub Mountains, his feet axed off by Islamic jihadists in the name of Sharia law. Pastor Vasco standing, looking at the west wall of the Fraser Cathedral, the birthplace of Christianity in southern Sudan, bombed by Muslims. Therefore, before Christians fall over themselves to apologize for the Crusades, which ended over 700 years ago, it would be wise for us to first learn from reliable sources what the Crusades were all about and study the Islamic teachings and track record of jihad over the last 14 centuries. I think that would be wise. After all, I didn't take part in the Crusades. My grandfather didn't take part in the Crusades. My great-grandfather didn't take part in the Crusades. But if I was around at that time, I think I would have. And here you can see Nairobi being attacked. What, New York being attacked? None of us are free from threats of Islamic terrorism. Those who do not know their past have no future. And we in Africa should know the threat of Islam, how Islam has been moving down, enslaving our people. Question, were the Crusades a failure? The constant depiction of the Crusades as a failure is not justified by the historical record. The Crusades succeeded in seizing the initiative, in throwing the Muslim invaders onto the defensive for the first time after 5 centuries of attack. The Crusaders united Europe and bought Europe time, centuries in fact. This is a picture of Richard the Lionhearted of England charging into the midst of the Islamic jihadists. At a critical time, the Crusades united a divided Europe, and they threw the Muslim invaders back. They brought about a peace and a security to Europe that had not been known for centuries. As a result of the tremendous sacrifices of the Crusaders, Christian Europe experienced spiritual revival and biblical reformation, which inspired a great resurgence of learning, scientific experimentation, technological advancement, movements that led to a greater prosperity and more freedoms than had ever been known in all of history. For a picture of what Europe might be like today had Islam succeeded in conquering it, just look at previously Christian civilizations of Egypt and what is today called Turkey. Remember, Turkey was a Christian nation. Remember, the 7 letters in the book of Revelation were written to churches that were all in what today is called Turkey, because the church took it over. The Muslims would now have Eurabia instead of Europe. And there would not be a South Africa. There would not be a Zambia. There would not be a Nigeria. There would not be a Uganda or a Kenya. There would not be a United States of America if it hadn't been for the Crusades saving Europe at that critical time so that the Reformation could be born into Europe and so that the Reformation could send the gospel to all corners of the world, which we have benefited from. So I don't think it's appropriate to apologize for the Crusades. Certainly not to the people still doing jihad today. What is today called Turkey was once the vibrant Christian Byzantine Empire, the economic and military superpower of its day. Today, the Christian civilization that has flourished there for 1,000 years has been extinguished. The last Christian city in Asia, Smyrna, was massacred by Turkish armies in 1922 under Ataturk. And this has been documented. There's a whole website dedicated to the memory of this. And by the way, all these pictures are in our book, Slavery, Terrorism, and Islam. Without the Crusades, it is questionable whether Europe or America would even exist, or any of our countries in Africa for that matter. The Crusades ended over 700 years ago, but Islamic jihad continues today. In America, in Africa, all over the world. But Psalm 72 verse 9, 11 says, the desert tribes will bow down to him. His enemies will lick the dust. All kings will bow down to him and all nations will serve him.
Amen.
So we've got a lot of resources on Understand the Challenge of Islam, Uprooting Terrorism, Slavery, Terrorism, Islam book, and different newsletters from Frontline at the back there, a Muslim Evangelism Workshop Manual, which is also in the Slavery, Terrorism, Islam book. We've got whole MP3s and CDs and PowerPoints on Islam. We want people to know about what Islam does to women, what it teaches about women in Islam, the most oppressed people in the world today, women in Islam. What the reformers said about Islam and the end of Islam. All of these are other presentations that we could give, but I think this one here just gives us an introduction. You'll get many of our articles on Islam on the frontline.org.za website as well.